2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio. For 3 decades now, the first person stories of and by the greatest rock musicians in history. I'm Redbeard, your conductor on this rock and roll train. And today in the studio, it's the 1980 live best of One for the Road by the Kinks.
Well, I'm the dumb, but I can't understand why she's walking like a woman but talk like a man. Oh, my Lola, la 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 Lola, la 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 Lola. Now I'm calling all citizens from all over the world. This is Captain America calling. I bet you I put you with down on the knees. When you catch me now, I'm falling.
I think when we go on stage, it's the only time that we feel that it's not really that serious. The Kinks have been a family unit in the sense that not just Dave and I are related. I think the band, like I said, I think if we didn't do it for the money, we'd do it anyway. If you can't do it, if you can't pull it together, what's the point of having the best deal in the world? It won't make the music any better.
And satellite heroes never.
Welcome back in the studio. I'm Ray Davies of the Kinks with Redbeard.
I don't recall which rock critic famously observed long ago that on any given night, the best rock and roll band in the world could be the Kinks, the London-based seminal band whose genetic code was defined by singer-songwriter Ray Davies and guitar innovator Brother Dave. Consistency, however, was not a hallmark of the Kinks' live performances. So the night before or after the Kinks absolutely blew the audience away as the harbingers of heavy metal, the progenitors of punk, and the purveyors of pop, the band could have notoriously walked off stage mid-show or even broke out in full-blown dust-ups and fistfights, knocking over microphone stands and tumbling into the drum kit. After that string of brilliant hit singles beginning in 1964 through 1968, consistency hadn't been evident in the Kinks' overall career either. Not until a trifecta of studio albums in the latter half of the 70s, beginning with Sleepwalker in 77, Misfits in 1978, and then Low Budget in 1979, the Kinks were on a roll and headlining U.S. arenas in 1980 when a series of shows were recorded and released as One for the Road. Rock's poet laureate, Sir Raymond Douglas Davies, made an astonishing admission to me about the Kinks, a band that has its name on nearly 36 releases to date.
The Kinks have always been a very good live band, so I felt that this is a perfect balance for the band. We're not fond of studio recording. We never have been, because we started off as a dance band, really, getting gigs at colleges and things. And the studio has always been a great... we find it boring recording tracks, because, as I say, the band like to get it first time. You know what musicians are like, they're egomaniacs.
Rock bands will come, rock bands will go. But rock and roll's gonna go on forever! All day and all the night!
I want
I think there's an energy in the Kinks shows that goes kind of a step further than that. It's the audience is very much part of what we do. And I think just think it's a kind of energy, it's a subliminal thing that goes on. People seem to know the audience to us is a very important factor in what we're doing. And it's not nice going out and seeing bands, you know, you like their hits and they duplicate their hits and thank you and good night and go home. There's more to it than that. I think there is a kind of, there's something else that goes on in a Kinks show. Sometimes it's nice and enjoyable. Other times it's hell out there. But you never know until we're on stage. It's similar, I think watching the Kinks is similar to going to a football game. You never know, you know who might win, but you can never tell until the final whistle. And it's a bit like a Kinks concert. Even when we're inconsistent, we're the best band in the world. In fact, it's when we're inconsistent that we are. I think when we try to be the best, it just never works out for us. I remember doing Madison Square Garden, going on stage. It was sold out. We did sold out two nights or whatever. And walked on stage and tripped over a lead and fell into the pit. Rock star isn't something you can really associate with the Kinks because it's everything that we're anti. We've always been that way. And more various managers and record companies have tried to make us posture and be like rock gods. The more there's something in us that turns us off of that. I don't know what it is. Much as I'd like to be, on the front cover of Rolling Stone magazine. I know everybody would like us to have that sort of in our makeup. But, you know, we're not the sort of band that lends itself to cover stories. It's nothing to do with fame either. It's more to do with our attitude towards, I guess, the mainstream. Even though we could be regarded as a mainstream band, but within our peers, you know, we're regarded still, I think, as outsiders, which is fine by me. That's why, you know, I think there are lots of newer bands come along and they kind of identify with us because we're not really... I suppose if they're the children of a family, we're not like older relatives. We're kind of sort of vagrant uncles have come back to the house, you know, Sunday for the free meal, you know, and they kind of drawn to us, and there's kind of an element of that of the, you know, still not the bad guys but the outsiders, which I quite like. Thank you.
sleeping in a field, but you look real rested. You set out to outrage, but you can't get arrested. You say your image is new, but it looks well tested. You're lost without a crowd, yet you go your own way. You say your summer's gone, now the winter is a crawling in. They say that even in your day, somehow you never could quite fit in. But it's cold outside, I know the summer's gonna shine again. Because you know what they say, every dog has his day. You're a misfit, afraid of yourself, so you run away at night. You've been a misfit all your life, why don't you join the club?
I think when we go on stage, it's the only time that we feel that it's not really that serious. When you go off tour, you think, oh, the real world's closing in on you, you know, and people go home and they realise that life is pretty dull. And the only thing to do is to go back on tour again. And the Kinks have been a family unit in the sense that not just Dave and I are related. I think the band, like I said, I think if we didn't do it for the money, we'd do it anyway. Like the thing about the audience, it's something removed and people forget that they've paid to buy a ticket. I mean, it's not to do with it's that. It's just wanting to be there. And it's a lot to do with our playing, you know. It's when they made this record, nobody came up to me and said to me, what's the deal? You know, they don't do that. Well, I know other bands that are around now, newer bands as well, they have all the deal worked out before they actually make music. And I suppose that's a smart thing to do. I'm not sure. You know, they got all the deal points done, but we don't think like that. And it's not a very business-like way to go about things, but if you can't do it, if you can't pull it together, what's the point of having the best deal in the world? It won't make the music any better. Obviously, people have got other considerations. They've got families and lives. But I always say to the band when they say that, I say, well, get rid of the family. You know, it's not important. No, I know they got lives. I know they got. We've all got lives. But think of it, I say to the band, think of it as a hobby. You know, if you've got to get a day job, get a day job and we'll do this at night.
Is anybody here on a low budget? We'll be right back.
might hurt me a bit. Even my trousers are giving me pain. Still, they're reduced to the style, so I shouldn't complain. They squeeze so tight, so I can't stand no more.
By now you've heard how the Kinks' classic Lola became controversial, and you think you know why. But coming up next, Ray Davies of the Kinks discusses how rock and roll in general, and Lola in particular, have benefited popular culture here in the 21st century. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Ray Davies of the Kinks for the live concert album One for the Road.
Welcome back in the studio. I'm Ray Davies of the Kinks with Redbeard.
Thank you, Sir Raymond. Over the last half century, the neocons have pointed to the Kinks and their rock spawn as threats to the conformist views of world order and decency. Kinks singer-songwriter Ray Davis, recently knighted by the Queen of England, feels that time has validated rock's contributions to a better society, and each day, history ennobles it. Certainly, there is no better current example today than the song Ray Davis wrote and the Kinks recorded in 1968, L-O-L-A-Lola.
Not until I'd written X-Ray, my book. It wasn't until I finished that I realized the people that influenced me. My real career was based on an area like less than a mile square, Muswell Hill, Highgate, where I grew up, two villages in London, and all the characters I saw there. So I learned a lot there, and I learned that people are interesting because of their faults. The perfect characters didn't interest me at all. It was the people who had a bit of edge to them, kind of hid away in cafes behind the shadows so nobody noticed them. They were the people that I was drawn to. And I suppose that carried on in my writing and songwriting and lyric writing. I think that when the Kinks first came to America, there was a big gulf in understanding. Even sense of humour was different. It still is to a degree, but it was drastically different then. But those barriers have been broken down through rock music, through pop songs.
What have I done? Anything wrong? Oh, yes, hey, I wasn't that good. So, because we're not going to play that one tonight anyway. All right, we'll do it. One condition, you've got to join in, sing along, right? I took a lot of persuading. In a club down an also old where you drink champagne, it is just that terrible. She walked up to me and she asked me to dance. I asked her her name and in a dark brown voice she said Lola, L-O-L-A. Lola, Lola, Lola. But talk like a man, oh my Lola, la 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 Lola.
people coming over with ideas. I remember when we first recorded Lola, it was banned in Australia and a few other countries because it dealt with, I don't know, someone who's a transvestite, a transsexual. But now it's commonplace. I mean, transsexuals are accepted as part of society. That's how the world evolves. That's how and I think that the latter part of this century has been, I think, a slightly better place, I think, because of rock music. I think it's really broadened people and made people sort of more or less judgmental on others and actually try to understand other cultures rather than turning it into a violent, drug-crazed world. I think that all the drug culture was emerging in the 50s and the 40s. It was there in the 30s, but they called it something else. The only thing that's happened is, I think, ordinary people have become, you know, part of that culture. Whereas, you know, that you've got all the stories in Hollywood in the 30s were people like doing lots of cocaine and doing drugs to stay sharp and stay on the set and look great. I wouldn't blame the culture on rock and roll. I think rock has improved the culture. Even some of the stuff that's possibly banned on radio. You know, I think we've got a really discerning, for the most part, audience out there. I mean, people can make their own minds up about records. I'm not saying that people should have the right to put out sheer abuse on the radio and just for the sake of it, just to grab attention. You know, the audience will know. They'll turn off eventually.
One for the Road, which sold at number 14 on the charts in 1980. Led by the Beatles, Rolling Stones, The Who, and The Animals, the Kinks certainly were at the forefront of the British invasion back then, but Ray Davis maintains that the Kinks were misfits even among those cultural rebels.
We never really fitted in with any, I guess we're British, part of the British invasion and all that, but we never really fitted in with most of those groups of people. I don't know, we just didn't get along. You know, yes, I like Mick Jagger, he's a nice bloke, and Keith is a wonderful laugh, a great guitarist, and I don't know, I just didn't feel part of it. I was doing it for another reason. And I was just doing, I just came into the band so I could, because I'd walked out of art college and I wanted to make money quickly so I could go and study art in another country, because I felt that England wasn't the place for me to be. I wanted to go and study art in Italy, or the latest thing, or the last thing I tried to do was go get into Polish film school, which was the hip thing to do then. And I thought, you really got me if that was a hit. It would pay for my schooling. Unfortunately, I had to do follow-ups. But then it turned into something else. I found my own art through that. So I was doing it. Everyone does it for different reasons, but the Kinks never fitted in with it. And particularly, I think it's my fault, because I became the front man of the band and I was the most secretive person imaginable. I didn't want anybody even to take my picture. And of course, when you're a front man, you have to be splashed everywhere. You know, have to be more of a whore than the others, if that's possible. And I rejected all that. So we turned into the great invisible band that nobody really knew what we looked like. And everyone knows the name, but they don't really put the faces to it. What do you do for a living? It's the whole thing. You know, it's you meet somebody on an airplane. But for the most part, the people you wouldn't expect, like the guys who work for the Bank of England, you know, the Kinks fans. And for the most part, people don't know who I am. And that's, I kind of like that. Because I can still write, you know. Like R.D. in my book, he still wrote in secrecy and privacy, even though the world has forgotten him. Yeah, it's like, it's that sort of thing. I couldn't cope with this high-profile stuff, like poor old Mick Jagger and Gerry Hall, you know, just have to have a quarrel and they're on the front page, in England anyway. I just couldn't cope with that, go mad. Now, in the dark bars and cafes, that's my zone. But, you know, when we made You Really Got Me, that was the number one record in England, did the top five, top ten here. Just went in to make the record for our own satisfaction and get it to sound the way we wanted it to sound. Because if you make records, go in the studio and aiming it at and targeting it at a market and just solely make music for that, I think you're just no longer a creative person. I see part of what I do now as being having sort of a vision all the way through, beginning to end. It's not really making records, it's just pursuing a personal goal.
Picture yourself when you're getting old, sat by the fireside, pondering on. In your birthday suit, sat in the sun on a hot afternoon. Picture book, your mama and your papa, and fat old Uncle Charlie out boozing with their friends. Picture book, a holiday in August, outside of bed and breakfast at sunny South End.
That's Ray Davies, who returns in the studio in a moment to discuss aging gracefully in an increasingly graceless age. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Ray Davies of the Kinks for the number 14 seller in 1980, One for the Road.
Welcome back in the studio. I'm Ray Davies of the Kinks with Redbeard.
Living with the rock and roll past, gracefully, hasn't been as easy for some of Ray Davies's peers. In the 1980s, various members of the Beatles, Rolling Stones, The Who, and Led Zeppelin were all reluctant to discuss their past for fear that it would preclude any artistic future. But one by one, these musicians have acknowledged their musical milestones and embraced their pasts. Ray Davies of the Kinks certainly can relate.
Listen, I can't understand it because it's... Put yourself in their shoes, poor old boys. You know, they got stuff they want to write, I suppose. I could understand them not wanting to be sort of trapped by their past because it's like saying to Picasso, you know, you can't paint any more pictures after the blue period. And he was 40 years old when he was going through that, or cubism, whatever. Unfortunately, it's not even the fans that say that. It's all the things you have to go through. I'm talking about media people, record companies, TV, radio. They're the people that sort of are judgmental on this. I think fans always have this theory. The great thing about playing live, it's the one occasion you can be one-on-one with your fans without going through all the business of relying on somebody to cut the record, someone to press the record, to do the artwork, then to play the record. You know, it's the key holders, whatever they are. And I can understand, but I can go back to your question, I can understand that the guy's being a little bit resistant about talking about the past too much. But, you know, I've never really had a problem with that because even when I was 21, I was writing songs for my granddad to sing. They wrote songs, and the classic one is Pete, who wrote, "Wish I Could Die Before I Get Old." But it's a damning line to have written. If it's the work's good, be remembered for good work. And hopefully the new work you do will be better or as good, or maybe not as good. But at least if you can function and write and perform, I think it's quite a blessing to be able to do that. So, but you've got to understand these guys have tremendous egos. You know, I've no idea what it's like to have an ego, but they must have continual worries, you know, but coming, you know, when Robert Plant was 20, he had his first hit, and it was a sexually driven song. Led Zeppelin music was, you know, it was a head job, you know. It's a bit more difficult to carry that off, whereas I've had character songs, you know, Celluloid Heroes. I could be 90 years old when I'm singing that, and I wouldn't have to worry whether I'd be embarrassed by singing it, because I think it's kind of ageless.
Everybody's in movies. It doesn't matter who you are. There are stars in every city, in every house and on every street. And if you walk down Hollywood Boulevard, their names are written in concrete. Because she wanted to be alone.
the sublime Celluloid Heroes. From the Kinks' 1972 album Everybody's in Showbiz, here's the author and singer Ray Davis.
I was living in, I was staying a lot in California, just off Hollywood Boulevard. I got into meeting a lot of different characters. And I went back there recently, and basically the same characters are there. The aspiring people that come to this place, it's got this magical quality to it, to get destroyed by it. I mean, it's a very destructive place. And yet, as destroyed as they get, if there's an opportunity to be in an extra in a film, they'll grab the opportunity. Then it's not a coincidence that you've got a lot of religious cults around a place like Hollywood. You know, just around the back of Hollywood Boulevard now is a big Scientology hotel. There's a lot of religious cults around there. All you've got now in Hollywood Boulevard is prostitution, drugs, a few sleazy eateries, but wonderful. They've always been sleazy, and that's the magic of it. There's not really big money there. Most people go there because they expect all the glamour, but it's the sleaziest place, the most wonderful place to go, because the day is all you've got, because you're dead after the day, and tomorrow's another, you know, another slog. And you realize that more than anywhere else in this place, Hollywood, because it's so destructive and so seductive still. It hadn't changed since, I wrote that song, and it hasn't changed since then. You've still got the same characters there. It was just a wonderful time. And the song, you know, when you do research on a song and work it out properly, it really writes itself. The funniest thing about the record is that the original record is that we had to deliver an album in New York on the Monday, and we hadn't recorded this song and Celluloid Heroes and two other tracks for the album. So we went in Friday morning and recorded all through the weekend without a break. And the last track we did was Celluloid Heroes. And I was doing the vocals and mixing it at 9 o'clock in the morning on the Monday morning, and I was going to go straight to the airport to get on the plane to take it to the States. And the sound engineer had to sort of sleep. He was asleep, but I made him sleep by the door so the next session couldn't get in. And I had to do the mix myself because the second engineer had gone home, and the main engineer, a guy called Mike Boback, I remember his name, Mike had to sleep by the door to keep the next session out. So we'd be thrown out. And it's when you hear that nice, gentle ending, you know, it dies away into sort of mystic, like someone's beating the door, shouting for us to get out of there.
few years ago, Kink's songs You Really Got Me and Tired of Waiting for You were each used in high-profile TV ad campaigns. So I asked the author of these songs, Ray Davis, his thoughts on Madison Avenue's increasing use of rock music to sell products in the 21st century.
I don't watch a lot of television, but I haven't seen the ads yet. But everybody asks me about them. Yeah, you see, I must point out at this stage, I don't have control over those two songs. So the judgment call is, as long as you're not doing harm to people and telling them to do something which is kind of completely wrong, and provided you're not bringing the copyright into disrepute, I suppose there's not much you can do about it. For many, yeah, you know, at the end of the day, there might be royalties in it, you never know. But I don't necessarily have control over that. And it's all down to taste, I think. So if it was a choice between having my song performed badly by a sort of cheesy cover or having the original Kinks version, I'd go for the original version, because it's not saying that Van Halen is a cheesy cover. I mean, they can get other people exactly to duplicate it. So I'd rather they could use the original, because people will think it's us anyway. But the whole thing with You Really Got Me and the way we recorded it and subsequently the way Van Halen covered it in a more, I guess, aggressive form, was because it grabbed attention. And that's an attention grabber, that opening. And so you're dealing in a commercial world and you've got the advertising sponsors saying, what can we get to grab attention? They'll get something like You Really Got Me every time, or Beethoven's Fifth or something. It's all to do with what sells. But divorcing, you know, but are we saying that You Really Got Me is going to make people buy cars? I'm not sure. It's just a device to draw people's attention, probably, to the television set. It's a very, very subjective thing. I am wary of the advertising world, but it's all this, the culture's so intermingled now, you know. What's art anymore? What is selling out? What's being commercial? You know, you've got ballet companies, you've got orchestras being sponsored by automobile and foundations for endowment of the arts. It's also it's interacting so much now. But I wouldn't say that we've sold out. I think our music has been, it carries it onto a new audience. I know what's going to happen now. I'll do a date, or the Kinks will go on tour. We'll play somewhere like Utah, and people will be shouting out for the Nissan ad. or we'll play it, and they'll say, "Oh, you played that Van Halen song really well."
Well, baby, I feel good. We'll be right back.
The Kinks with the Best Of live album. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest Ray Davis. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2018, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet, theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.
In the back of a record rack, there's an old double pack, 12 inches and black, with an old crumpled cover, but every track is stacked. And it takes me back to the one who caused this melancholy mood, and every single groove cuts me to the bone. Just made for you. Then we danced the song of passion, and the singers fell the tones on the gramophone while the record played. She rocks me to the bone, knocks me to the bone. Those rocking old romantic songs laid all summer long. Just like a nail, as she rocks me to